Practice Test 2. This is the Cambridge English B2 Business Vantage, Listening Test 2. You will hear an introduction to each part of the test, and you will have time to look at the questions before you listen. You will hear each piece twice. While you are listening, you should write your answers on the question paper. There will now be a pause. Please ask any questions now, because you must not speak during the test. Now, open your question paper and look at part one. Part one, questions 1 to 12. You will hear three telephone conversations or messages. Write one or two words or a number in the numbered spaces on the notes or forms below. You will hear each recording twice. Recording 1. Questions 1 to 4. Look at the notes below. You will hear a man calling a customer about a delayed order. You have 15 seconds to read through the notes. Now listen and fill in the spaces.
Mabry and Associates, how can I help?
Bob Brundy, please.
Sorry, but Bob's not in the office at the moment. Can I help?
Yes, this is James Wilson. I wanted to tell him that...
Sorry to interrupt, but I didn't catch what company you're with.
Oh, right. I'm with Quality Merino. That's M-E-R-I-N-O.
Quality Merino. OK, got it. Now, what was your message?
Some samples Bob ordered have been held up at customs. That almost never happens, but when it does, the delay can be considerable. At best, the shipment will arrive in a week or two, but it could be a month.
Oh, dear.
Bob told me he needed the samples by the 27th of May. So his best option is to order the exact same samples again. As I said, it's rare to have hold-ups at customs, so the second order will almost certainly arrive a day or two before that date.
OK. And should Bob cancel the first order?
It's already on its way, so he can't. But when it arrives, he can just return the package to us. I'll refund the return costs in full.
OK. I'll pass on the message.
Thanks.
Now, you will hear the recording again.
Mabry and Associates, how can I help?
Bob Brundy, please.
Sorry, but Bob's not in the office at the moment. Can I help?
Yes, this is James Wilson. I wanted to tell him that...
Sorry to interrupt, but I didn't catch what company you're with.
Oh, right. I'm with Quality Merino. That's M-E-R... I-N-O.
Quality Merino. OK, got it. Now, what was your message?
Some samples Bob ordered have been held up at customs. That almost never happens, but when it does, the delay can be considerable. At best, the shipment will arrive in a week or two, but it could be a month.
Oh, dear.
Bob told me he needed the samples by the 27th of May. So his best option is to order the exact same samples again. As I said, it's rare to have hold-ups at customs, so the second order will almost certainly arrive a day or two before that date.
OK. And should Bob cancel the first order?
It's already on its way, so he can't. But when it arrives, he can just return the package to us. I'll refund the return costs in full.
OK. I'll pass on the message.
Thanks.
Recording 2. Questions 5 to 8. Look at the notes below. You will hear a woman calling a colleague to give him some feedback. You have 15 seconds to read through the notes. Now listen and fill in the spaces.
Hello?
Dan, it's Melissa.
Oh, hiya.
You asked for some feedback on your proposal. Is this a good time to talk?
Sure.
Well, overall, I think it's pretty good, so well done. There are a few issues, though. First, I think your title is too long. I suggest cutting it to 4 to 6 words at most. Jen's good at short, snappy titles. Ask to see some of hers.
Good idea. I'll do that.
Also, I think you accidentally turned off your spelling checker when you were typing pages 16 and 17. Take a careful look at the mistakes on those pages, OK?
Thanks for spotting that.
No problem. Now, my last point is the big one. I think most of the photos you included are great, but some of them don't convey quite the right impression. They should say energy and fun, but some of them say peace and relaxation to me.
That's not good.
I've got some suggestions for better photos, but obviously I can't show you over the phone. Why don't you drop by my office tomorrow at 10?
Could we make it 1 hour later?
Yes, I'm free until 12, in fact. Now, you will hear the recording again.
Hello?
Dan, it's Melissa.
Oh, hiya.
You asked for some feedback on your proposal. Is this a good time to talk?
Sure.
Well, overall, I think it's pretty good. So well done. There are a few issues, though. First, I think your title is too long. I suggest cutting it to 4 to 6 words at most. Jen's good at short, snappy titles. Ask to see some of hers.
Good idea. I'll do that.
Also, I think you accidentally turned off your spelling checker when you were typing pages 16 and 17. Take a careful look at the mistakes on those pages, OK?
Thanks for spotting that.
No problem. Now, my last point is the big one. I think most of the photos you included are great, but some of them don't convey quite the right impression. They should say energy and fun, but some of them say peace and relaxation to me.
That's not good.
I've got some suggestions for better photos, but obviously I can't show you over the phone. Why don't you drop by my office tomorrow at 10?
Could we make it 1 hour later?
Yes, I'm free until 12, in fact. Recording 3. Questions 9 to 12. Look at the notes below. You will hear a woman leaving a message about an upcoming conference. You have 15 seconds to read through the notes. Now listen and fill in the spaces.
You've reached Carol Bankhead. Go ahead and leave a message after the beep.
Carol, it's Yolanda Carson here, one of the conference organisers. As you might have heard, there was a fire at the conference centre last week. Nobody was hurt, luckily, but the centre will be closed for weeks. So we've had to make some unavoidable changes to our programme. All the details are on our website, which is www.praag.co.uk. But here's how those changes will affect you personally. First, and most importantly, we've had to find a new venue. Luckily, the Grand Hotel conference space is available. It's literally across the street from the original venue, so it's not a major inconvenience. However, the hotel has fewer conference rooms, So we're asking everyone to shorten their talks by 15 minutes so we can fit all the talks in. This also means some dates and times have changed. Your talk is now scheduled for 11:30 a.m. on the Thursday, not Wednesday as originally planned. Sorry. That's it for now. I'm looking forward to meeting you next Tuesday. But if you have any questions, I'm available until Friday.
Now you will hear the recording again.
You've reached Carol Bankhead. Go ahead and leave a message after the beep.
Carol, it's Yolanda Carson here, one of the conference organisers. As you might have heard, there was a fire at the conference centre last week. Nobody was hurt, luckily, but the centre will be closed for weeks, so we've had to make some unavoidable changes to our programme. All the details are on our website, which is www.praag.co.uk. But here's how those changes will affect you personally. First, and most importantly, we've had to find a new venue. Luckily, the Grand Hotel conference space is available. It's literally across the street from the original venue, so it's not a major inconvenience. However, the hotel has fewer conference rooms, so we're asking everyone to shorten their talks by 15 minutes so we can fit all the talks in. This also means some dates and times have changed. Your talk is now scheduled for 11:30 a.m. on the Thursday, not Wednesday as originally planned. Sorry. That's it for now. I'm looking forward to meeting you next Tuesday. But if you have any questions, I'm available until Friday.
That is the end of part one. You now have 20 seconds to check your answers. Part 2. Questions 13 to 22. Section 1. Questions 13 to 17. You will hear 5 short recordings. 5 people are talking about how they get to work. For each recording, decide why each speaker chose to use a particular mode of transport. Write one letter, A to H, next to the number of the recording. Do not use any letter more than once. You will hear the 5 recordings twice. You have 15 seconds to read the list A to H. Now listen and decide why each speaker chose a particular method of transport.
For years, I drove to work each day. It wasn't something I chose to do, really. I just never gave it much thought. Then one day I had an accident. It wasn't serious, luckily, but it shook me up and made me lose my confidence. Anyway, I soon realised that taking the bus was no slower than driving, as buses get to use special lanes and can cut through the traffic. And it costs slightly less too, because I'm not paying for parking or petrol any longer.
I saw the doctor one day for a routine appointment. I expected she would say I was fine. So it was a shock to hear that my blood pressure was dangerously high. I was given a choice: take pills every day or modify my lifestyle, with the latter being her recommendation. So I began cycling to work. At first, it was really tough, but now I love it, and I wouldn't give it up. And my health is in great shape now, which is the icing on the cake.
Fifteen.
I've got three kids who need to get dropped off at two different schools, on opposite sides of the river, naturally. Then there's my spouse who works in the office on Mondays and Fridays, and another location the rest of the week. So, although I'd prefer not to drive in the city, I really don't feel I have any other option. The car was in the garage for a few days a couple of months ago, and using public transportation was just a total disaster, to be honest.
I don't know why, really, but I've loved trains ever since I was young. It's embarrassing to admit, but after I got a promotion and felt more secure at work, I moved a few miles away from the office just so I could commute by train. My job can be stressful, but somehow the journey calms me. It helps that the countryside around here is beautiful, I'm sure. My boss has mentioned that I might get transferred. If that happens, I hope I can still get to work by train.
I
made my company a lot of money a few years back and was given a really generous bonus in thanks. With property being such a good investment, using the money to buy a house seemed like a smart move. We found a dream place and quickly made an offer. We were delighted when it was accepted. But after we realised how bad the train services were from the new place, we felt a little upset. Still, having to drive to work is a small price to pay for living somewhere we love.
Now you will hear the five recordings again.
For years, I drove to work each day. It wasn't something I chose to do, really. I just never gave it much thought. Then one day I had an accident. It wasn't serious, luckily, but it shook me up and made me lose my confidence. Anyway, I soon realised that taking the bus was no slower than driving, as buses get to use special lanes and can cut through the traffic. And it costs slightly less, too, because I'm not paying for parking or petrol any longer.
14.
I saw the doctor one day for a routine appointment. I expected she would say I was fine, so it was a shock to hear that my blood pressure was dangerously high. I was given a choice: take pills every day or modify my lifestyle, with the latter being her recommendation. So I began cycling to work. At first it was really tough, but now I love it, and I wouldn't give it up. And my health is in great shape now, which is the icing on the cake.
15. I've got three kids who need to get dropped off at two different schools, on opposite sides of the river, naturally. Then there's my spouse who works in the office on Mondays and Fridays, and another location the rest of the week. So, although I'd prefer not to drive in the city, I really don't feel I have any other option. The car was in the garage for a few days a couple of months ago, and using public transportation was just a total disaster, to be honest. 16.
I don't know why, really, but I've loved trains ever since I was young. It's embarrassing to admit, but after I got a promotion and felt more secure at work, I moved a few miles away from the office just so I could commute by train. My job can be stressful, but somehow the journey calms me. It helps that the countryside around here is beautiful, I'm sure. My boss has mentioned that I might get transferred. If that happens, I hope I can still get to work by train.
17.
I made my company a lot of money a few years back and was given a really generous bonus in thanks. With property being such a good investment, using the money to buy a house seemed like a smart move. We found a dream place and quickly made an offer. We were delighted when it was accepted, but after we realised how bad the train services were from the new place, we felt a little upset. Still, Having to drive to work is a small price to pay for living somewhere we love.
Section 2. Questions 18 to 22. You will hear another 5 recordings. 5 people are talking about a problem they face. For each recording, decide how each speaker is planning to solve the issue. Write one letter, A to H, next to the number of the recording. Do not use any letter more than once. You will hear the 5 recordings twice. You have 15 seconds to read the list A to H. Now listen and decide how each speaker is planning to solve the issue.
I'm working on an important report right now. I'm supposed to finish it by the end of the week, but I've only done about a quarter of it, so that date's going to be very hard to meet. I talked to my family about the situation, and they advised me to get a colleague to help. But my manager likes her team to be self-directed and independent, so although it will mean a lot of unpaid overtime, I think I'm just going to put in the work and get it done.
I was asked to come up with a list of recommendations on how to improve sales in all markets. I know almost nothing about our Asian operations, though, so I'm not sure what ideas are likely to work there. I'll probably have to get some input from the people in our office in China. The time difference is something like 12 or 13 hours, though, which will make things challenging. And I'm hoping the language barrier won't pose too much of a problem.
We're in a bit of a panic right now. Apparently our website has been down for a few days, and the person who normally handles this stuff is on holiday. As the site brings in 1/5 of our business, it's a pretty big deal. My line manager asked me to get the site up and running again, but I'm not technical enough to handle it. I worry that I'd accidentally make the problem worse, so I'm going to recommend that we bring in a freelancer. That seems like the best solution to me.
Like a lot of retailers, we're struggling to compete with online marketplaces. We've tried various things, but nothing we do has much of an impact, to be honest. And people are starting to worry about losing their jobs. I'm attending an industry conference next week, and the schedule shows a lot of talks about ways to deal with this issue. I'm hoping I'll get some insights that will turn things around. If not, it might be time to think about a career change.
One of our senior executives recently quit in order to work for a major competitor. It's a bit of a scandal, to be honest. Anyway, my boss has asked me to come up with a strategy to, in her words, contain things. I've got a few ideas of my own as to how we could manage the situation, but several heads are better than one, as they say. So I've asked for and been given permission to put together a temporary task force to work on this. I just need to finalise my list of who to appoint.
Now you will hear the recordings again. 18.
I'm working on an important report right now. I'm supposed to finish it by the end of the week, but I've only done about a quarter of it, so that date's going to be very hard to meet. I talked to my family about the situation, and they advised me to get a colleague to help. But my manager likes her team to be self-directed and independent, so although it will mean a lot of unpaid overtime, I think I'm just going to put in the work and get it done.
Nineteen.
I was asked to come up with a list of recommendations on how to improve sales in all markets. I know almost nothing about our Asian operations, though, so I'm not sure what ideas are likely to work there. I'll probably have to get some input from the people in our office in China. The time difference is something like 12 or 13 hours, though, which will make things challenging. And I'm hoping the language barrier won't pose too much of a problem.
We're in a bit of a panic right now. Apparently our website has been down for a few days, and the person who normally handles this stuff is on holiday. As the site brings in 1/5 of our business, it's a pretty big deal. My line manager asked me to get the site up and running again, but I'm not technical enough to handle it. I worry that I'd accidentally make the problem worse, so I'm going to recommend that we bring in a freelancer. That seems like the best solution to me. 21.
Like a lot of retailers, we're struggling to compete with online marketplaces. We've tried various things, but nothing we do has much of an impact, to be honest. And people are starting to worry about losing their jobs. I'm attending an industry conference next week, and the schedule shows a lot of talks about ways to deal with this issue. I'm hoping I'll get some insights that will turn things around. If not, it might be time to think about a career change.
22.
One of our senior executives recently quit in order to work for a major competitor. It's a bit of a scandal, to be honest. Anyway, my boss has asked me to come up with a strategy to, in her words, contain things. I've got a few ideas of my own as to how we could manage the situation, but several heads are better than one, as they say. So I've asked for and been given permission to put together a temporary task force to work on this. I just need to finalise my list of who to appoint.
2. Part 3, questions 23 to 30. You will hear an interview with Randall Cheng, an expert in ecotourism. For each question, 23 to 30, mark one letter, A, B, or C, for the correct answer. You will hear the recording twice. You have 45 seconds to read through the questions. Now listen and mark A, B, or C.
Joining me today is Randall Cheng, who's here to talk about something called ecotourism. Welcome, Randall.
Thanks, Anne.
Let's start with the obvious question. What is ecotourism?
The International Ecotourism Society, for which I used to work, in fact, defines it as travel to natural areas that conserves the environment, sustains the well-being of local people, and involves interpretation and education.
I understand the part about travelling in an environmentally responsible way, but education? That doesn't sound much like tourism to me.
The idea is that tourism should protect the planet in the short term and the long term. It's good if tourists travel in a way that protects the environment now, but there needs to be thought for the future as well. The education aspect of ecotourism is intended to give both tourists and local people an understanding of how to protect the planet. That can be done by teaching respect for the environment an appreciation of the natural world, and so on.
I see. I don't wish this next question to sound rude, but is ecotourism necessary? I mean, some people may say it's just a way to sell more expensive holiday packages to people who want a vacation but feel guilty about the environment.
That's a pretty cynical question. Let me put it to you this way. In 2016, the tourism industry contributed 7.5 trillion or so US dollars to the world economy. In other words, tourism is one of the largest and most important industries on the planet. And it's a growing industry, too. Over 1.2 billion people travel abroad as tourists each year. And that number is expected to rise by 500 million in the next 10 years. Let's think for a minute about some other globally important industries. Food production, construction, transportation. As customers, we get angry when those industries harm the environment. Why should tourism be any different?
I take your point.
And tourism is vital to many countries. Many island nations in the Caribbean, for instance, rely on tourists for 10, 20, even 30% of their gross domestic product. And places as far apart geographically and culturally as Iceland and Thailand rely on tourists to produce 7 or 8% of the value of their economies. So tourism is necessary, but it's also a problem because tourists damage the environment. In theory, we go...
Sorry to interrupt you, Randall, but in what ways do tourists cause damage?
Okay, well, tourists can cause damage if too many of them visit and enjoy activities in an area. Let me give you a very simple example. Suppose there's a beautiful beach that only 100 people know about and visit. That beach will probably not be damaged much by the impact of humans. But if 10,000 people were to learn about it, the beach would probably be in trouble. Tourists are not trying to cause damage, of course, but there are three main ways that just going somewhere can lead to environmental harm. First of all, tourism uses up natural resources like water, food, energy, and so on. And there is often a high environmental cost to replacing such resources. Second, tourism generates many kinds of pollution. And finally, tourism has a physical impact on natural areas. This includes the construction of hotels and roads and so on. It also includes the harm that thousands of people taking the same path in a peaceful forest can cause.
This may seem like an obvious question, but isn't the solution simply for people to stop going abroad?
Well, yes, if there were no more tourism, the environmental impact of tourism would disappear, of course. But clearly that's not going to happen. I just explained how important tourism is to the economy of many countries. If tourism ended, those nations would be in serious financial trouble. No, tourism will continue whatever we do. So ecotourism is needed to reduce its impact.
That sounds like a worthwhile goal to me. Let me open the floor now. Are there any questions for Randall?
Now you will hear the recording again.
Joining me today is Randall Cheng, who's here to talk about something called ecotourism. Welcome, Randall.
Thanks, Anne.
Let's start with the obvious question. What is ecotourism?
The International Ecotourism Society, for which I used to work, in fact, defines it as travel to natural areas that conserves the environment, sustains the well-being of local people, and involves interpretation and education.
I understand the part about traveling in an environmentally responsible way, but education? That doesn't sound much like tourism to me.
The idea is that tourism should protect the planet in the short term and the long term. It's good if tourists travel in a way that protects the environment now, but there needs to be thought for the future as well. The education aspect of ecotourism is intended to give both tourists and local people an understanding of how to protect the planet. That can be done by teaching respect for the environment, an appreciation of the natural world, and so on.
I see. I don't wish this next question to sound rude, but is ecotourism necessary? I mean, some people may say it's just a way to sell more expensive holiday packages to people who want a vacation but feel guilty about the environment.
That's a pretty cynical question. Let me put it to you this way. In 2016, the tourism industry contributed 7.5 trillion or so US dollars to the world economy. In other words, tourism is one of the largest and most important industries on the planet. And it's a growing industry, too. Over 1.2 billion people travel abroad as tourists each year. And that number is expected to rise by 500 million in the next 10 years. Let's think for a minute about some other globally important industries. Food production, construction, transportation. As customers, we get angry when those industries harm the environment. Why should tourism be any different?
I take your point.
And tourism is vital to many countries. Many island nations in the Caribbean, for instance, rely on tourists for 10, 20, even 30% of their gross domestic product. And places as far apart geographically and culturally as Iceland and Thailand rely on tourists to produce 7 or 8% of the value of their economies. So tourism is necessary, but it's also a problem because tourists damage the environment. In theory, we
Sorry to interrupt you, Randall, but in what ways do tourists cause damage?
Okay, well, tourists can cause damage if too many of them visit and enjoy activities in an area. Let me give you a very simple example. Suppose there's a beautiful beach that only 100 people know about and visit. That beach will probably not be damaged much by the impact of humans. But if 10,000 people were to learn about it, the beach would probably be in trouble. Tourists are not trying to cause damage, of course, but there are three main ways that just going somewhere can lead to environmental harm. First of all, tourism uses up natural resources like water, food, energy, and so on. And there is often a high environmental cost to replacing such resources. Second, tourism generates many kinds of pollution. And finally, tourism has a physical impact on natural areas. This includes the construction of hotels and roads and so on. It also includes the harm that thousands of people taking the same path in a peaceful forest can cause.
This may seem like an obvious question, but isn't the solution simply for people to stop going abroad?
Well, yes. If there were no more tourism, the environmental impact of tourism would disappear, of course. But clearly that's not going to happen. I just explained how important tourism is to the economy of many countries. If tourism ended, those nations would be in serious financial trouble. No, tourism will continue whatever we do. So ecotourism is needed to reduce its impact.
That sounds like a worthwhile goal to me. Let me open the floor now. Are there any questions for Randall?
That is the end of Test 2.